Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. There's no business like your business. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
There we go. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. What a day it was yesterday. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. But for all of us who are just hunkered down on our couches watching football for 6-7 hours, it was unbelievable theater, Mark Schlereth. And in the end, we get the Rams and them again, the Patriots, back in the Super Bowl. Where to start with all of this? Where do you want to start?
First off, I don't know about the rest of you. I don't know about you. But, like, I literally was replaying stuff in my head. I couldn't go to sleep last night. I tossed and turned. I kept waking up. I mean, it was, what a day. What an unbelievable day of great football. And, you know, I guess we start with the Saints, right? We start with the call. And I have been one, you and I texted, I have been one my whole career. I was taught from day one, take responsibility. You are where you are because of the decisions you made in your life. This is a good life lesson. And there were so many opportunities you had to win a football game that you let slip through the cracks. And I will tell you this, you had the one penalty that was not called, the pass interference that should have been, or the helmet-to-helmet defenseless receiver that should have been, and one team responded like, all right, we got life, let's keep playing. The other team responded like, oh, woe is me, I can't even believe this. You guys took a game from me when there was plenty of time left to go out and execute. So, you know, we can sit there and we can, you know, divvy it up and parse it out any way we want to parse it out, but I look at you got the ball at the 12 yard line and you threw a pass, which was incomplete. It was a poor throw by Drew Brees. He had a couple of them in that game and stopped the clock when had you run it twice, they would have had to use both their timeouts. You're running on third down. You're going to get a field goal and they're going to get the ball with no timeouts and under a minute left to play. Like, you managed that situation as poorly as you could have managed that situation. As a head coach, you didn't manage it well. That to me, that cost you the game every bit as much as a non-call cost you the game. So, we can sit here and, you know, we can sit here and cry about it or whine about it or, you know, or stomp our feet or carry the pitchforks and lanterns up to the, wherever Park Avenue, wherever the NFL offices are. But the bottom line is you had an opportunity, Saints, and you let it slip through your hands.
Even though had pass interference been called there.
Should have been.
The you get all these analytics now and stats that can determine win probability, lose probability at different points of the game.
Right.
And it was determined that had the penalty been called there, the Saints had a 98% chance of winning the football game. So, I think for me, I'm like you, I still look at all the things. I mean, hey, Saints, you know, you could have been up 14-0 instead of 6-0.
Right.
And, you know, this game's probably over. So there are a lot of things you could point to, but there's still the idea that if that call is made, and I guess it's more the idea of, you know, everything seems to be subject to replay. I'd like to know why can't pass interference be subject to replay? Why can't, we know what pass interference is. I mean, it's not, a lot of times it's not that much of a judgment call. You can see it. So why not be able to have the wherewithal to be able to challenge a pass interference call or one that wasn't called?
Right. I've never been a fan of instant replay. Because I hate the fact that there are, like you said, there are things that you can't challenge. And then I hate the fact that there are things that seem fairly obvious to me that don't get reversed. And you know, I mean, they did a pretty good job. The Edelman thing I thought was pretty clear that it didn't touch him, even though it was very close. That was a great challenge or great replay and great reversal of the call. I think they have to make changes to that some form or fashion. is there an opportunity for a coach to have his three challenges plus one, and it's a penalty challenge? Or critical, you know, critical penalty challenge, you can challenge that? The fear, I guess, is you carry on. Here's one of the things that's always driven me crazy. All right. If the call is being made in New York, why do we have to go through the histrionics of the ref going to the sideline and looking in the little, other than it's a marketing deal, right? Because Microsoft is paying the league so much damn money. Why do we have to go through that? Why can't the officials in New York just look at it, wire over to the official on the field and say, that's the reversal? Why does he have to, you know, run over to the little Microsoft Surface tablet and look if it's the final calls being made in New York anyhow? Like little stuff like that, and I get that they're making a lot of money, but the bottom line is it's more important to get it right.
Well, that's why I've always been a fan of instant replay. I have no problem with instant replay.
It's not that I hate instant replay because a lot of times it's inconclusive, or it's we can't challenge that play, or I hate it when you know something was incomplete and like you run up to the line of scrimmage and try to snap the ball, because we look like a bunch of clowns. Like, if we're going to do it, let's do it the right way. There's got to be a better way to do it.
I'm saying that there needs to be something in place to be able to challenge a penalty call like that. Because Marcus, yeah. This is a bid to the Super Bowl. This is, you know, if you're the Saints, you feel like your chance to go to a Super Bowl, a career-defining, perhaps life-defining moment, is taken away from you because of a bad call. That had replay been there, maybe you get it right. And that's the idea. I've always heard the arguments, well, you don't want to take the human element out of it, or it just extends and makes the game longer than anybody wants it to be. Who cares?
Right.
Get it right.
Yeah.
There's too much at stake.
Okay, so I would challenge this to you for all you instant replay people.
You people.
Why do we have to have a challenge flag then?
Everything should just be buzzed from upstairs?
Hell yes.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that.
Right.
I'm fine with that.
Like, we want to get the game right. Unless, of course, you don't have any challenge flags left, because then we don't care about getting it right. Do you understand the mixed message? See, these are the things these are the reasons I hate instant replay. Because I think there's some solvable situations that are pretty easy, and yet we don't solve them. Why? Maybe it's because of the drama. Hell, man, there's enough drama in this game. There's plenty of drama in this game. If we're going to get it right, let's just get the damn thing right all the time. Buzz it down from upstairs, stop the game, look at it. Boom. Done. Easy. I solved it. Let's move on.
Well, the matchup is set in Atlanta. Rams and Patriots will be live on Radio Row next week in Atlanta, thanks to BlueChew.com. So we look forward to that. The AFC Championship game. Were they in the end, were they still those September darlings? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Do you remember?
It's a great tune.
In the end, were the Kansas City Chiefs September darlings?
Mm-hmm. Man, I tell you what, they played. They were incredible all season long. All season long.
They're down 14-0. They came back. It was a great football game, back and forth, but. Man, if you're Kansas City, you got to be just kicking yourself. The third and longs that they just couldn't stop. When everybody in the building knew the ball was either going, it was just by the way that, I mean, Tony Romo was all over it. He's like, all right, Gronk's lined up wide. They're going to go to Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now Gronk's in, so he's going to go out wide, and now they're going to throw to Edelman over the middle. And I mean, everybody knew the ball was going to go to Edelman or Gronk on those third and longs.
Right.
Brady made throws. Edelman, Gronk made catches. And yet still, third and 10, D Ford lined up in the neutral zone, which negated what would have been a game-ending interception. Oh, Kansas City, Kansas City.
How about it, man? And
showtime.
You mentioned, you know, Tony Romo was all over it, but, you know, just the motion down of Edelman, because they don't have a receiver that's going to, they don't have receivers that are just going to eat you up in man coverage. KC was playing a lot of two man. They just motion Edelman down to get a stack release to make sure you can't press him. You can't get your hands on him. And that's how they're getting him open in the middle of the football field. I mean, I tell you what, it was a masterful job of coaching by Bill Belichick. So many subtleties, Mike, that I think go unnoticed. One thing that I noted that I was writing down my notes is, look at how the New England Patriots, in a day and age where it's all spread, let's hurry to the line, let's see how many plays we can get off. The Patriots huddled on every play. They ran the clock down to inside 10 seconds before they snapped it on every play. They understood that possessions were paramount. And more importantly, keeping Kansas City's possessions limited is what was going to win them that game. So that was incredible. And then something as simple as pass rush. You know, we just think, hey, turn guys loose. There was a method to the madness. How many times did you see, you know, two guys out, one guy looping back from the outside back into the middle to create inside pressure on Patrick Mahomes? So his escape lane is to the outside, but you're rushing somebody out to the outside in the games, you know, in the nose tackle out and loop around. And so you're forcing him basically to where your end has vacated and they come up the middle. So you're forcing him. He feels like, oh, I can escape where that end just left. But your defensive tackle is out there now because of the game stuff. So simple little subtleties from a coaching standpoint. They did that consistently, against Mahomes. It was just it's a masterful job of coaching. And this is where coaching matters so much. You know, you think that, hey, it's about the players, and it is. You got to have great players. But come on. I mean, for all those people that were like, well, you know, the Patriots, and man, there's no question that the Kansas City Chiefs are the more talented football team. Am I wrong? Like Tyreek Hill, how many times he touched the ball? He had that 142-yard catch, and then what else he had?
I think he was only targeted a couple times in the game. He had one catch for 42 yards. He was targeted three times. They just took him away.
Said, you're not going to throw it to him.
You're not going to beat us.
He's not going to win. That's where the coaching matters.
Yes, and that's where, and I complete, what you saw, especially in the first half, was a masterful coaching job and a game plan.
Right. They had three possessions. They got their fourth possession with whatever seconds left and had the sack they gave up,
but
and then ended.
In the fourth quarter, 38 points were scored. And right. To me, by that point, you know, the game plans had been figured out, adjusted to, and then it was just guys out there balling. Guys were out there making plays.
Right.
And that was what was so fun to watch. I mean, you know, those Brady throws to Edelman, the Mahomes throws on the run. I mean, that wasn't scheme. That was just beautiful under pressure, making plays. And in the end, the Patriots make one more big play. And maybe their biggest play was Matthew Slater calling heads.
Right.
So Tom Brady is 3-0 in postseason overtime games. In all three cases, the other team never saw the ball. So that's the other debate that came out of yesterday. It was the it was the officiating in the Saints-Rams game, and it was the overtime rules that were held up for scrutiny after the Chiefs and Patriots. What about the overtime rules? Do the overtime rules need to be changed? I mean, we're sitting here debating whether or not pass interference should be a call that is challenged. What about these overtime rules?
Overtime rules have never bothered me.
The fact that
as
you
a,
can,
as a
the
player,
fact that
they
all
didn't
you
bother
have,
me.
Really, the fact no. that okay, you're so you're telling me that if you were a member of the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday, and at the end of the day, Patrick Mahomes didn't get a chance to get the ball in overtime because you lost a coin flip,
yeah,
you're okay with that?
Yeah. Stop him. Did your 11 players on defense get a chance? Because I think they did.
They did.
Right. I mean, stop him. You got him down to third down and long three different times. He had two third down and nines, a third down and ten they converted. Stop him. You had ample opportunity to stop the New England Patriots. You couldn't get it done in crunch time. So those rules have never bothered me.
Okay, but just like in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago with the Patriots in Atlanta, we all knew the moment that New England won the toss that they were going to go down and score. You could just tell.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't we all understand that whoever won the toss, that team was likely going to go down and score a touchdown and win the game?
Sure.
So then it just comes down to the randomness of the toss.
Well, no, it doesn't. I mean, you still got to make plays. Hey, run down there, stop them in the red zone. I mean, stop Rex Burkhead in the red zone and make him kick a field goal. You get the ball back with a chance to win it on your own. I
get what you're saying. I'm all for the idea that it still comes down to making plays in overtime, but again, I come back to the magnitude of the game, and this is a career-defining, life-defining moment for a lot of these guys. Shouldn't both teams at least get a chance to have the ball?
No.
I'm not saying you have to resort to gimmicky college football overtime rules, but shouldn't there be something so that both teams have a chance to get the ball?
Both teams had a chance to win. You had a chance to win with your defense. New England had a chance to win with their offense. Your defense didn't get it done. September darlings. Boom. Over.
By the way, I was talking to a buddy of mine who lives in Kansas City for the last 25 years. Mm. He said, you will find this interesting. Denver came up a lot last week in the build-up to this game. The idea being that, well, if Denver could beat the Patriots at home in AFC championship games, we better damn well do it too.
Yeah, but you're Kansas City.
So you know, the Broncos were being referenced.
Well,
all week.
Patriots go back to the Super Bowl, and now we go, 49 years since the Kansas City Chiefs have been there? Hey, this is what's 50 years? Is like 25 is the silver anniversary? What's 50? Is it the gold?
I think 50 is the gold.
Gold anniversary, the last time the Kansas City Chiefs were in the Super Bowl.
I believe Fran Tarkenton was the quarterback.
Had that one graphic up last night where all the players, like 133 players, have Super Bowl experience for the AFC championship and zero for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I said, in the stadium, they said zero for the Kansas City Chiefs, 133 for the, I said, that's not right. Lynn Dawson was in the press box. He's got AFC championship pedigree.
Some good snark right there. That's good. Good snark. Well, the Super Bowl matchup is set. And we'll tell you why it's going to be real easy for you to root for the Rams. That's next.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to keep lightning, and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stuff.
Know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on.
Brady under center. A give to Burkhead. Runs it left for the win! Touchdown, Patriots! And they're bound for Super Bowl 53!
What a call, Sosie. We're going back, baby. And there ain't nothing you can do about it. America's worst nightmare is back. We're going to our fourth Super Bowl in 5 years. Pack your bags. Start our buses. We're coming home, Boston.
And that is why America hates the Patriots right there. But they are back. They did it again. And I maybe going all the way back to their first Super Bowl, was this their most unlikely trip to the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they were 3-5 on the road this year. They went 11-5. You know, they hadn't won a road playoff game since 2006. You look at them out on the field, especially offensively. There's no speed.
Right.
Whatsoever. And yet, here they are. How'd they do it?
Well, they did it through coaching. They did it through their quarterback, the world's greatest American. They did it through great game planning. Great execution of game plan. you know, that's what they do. They find ways to win. It's such a remarkable run. So 18 years for Tom Brady, 17 years in which he played because he tore his ACL. Remember week one or week two, I guess, of the 08 season or whatever it was. That means 13 of 17 years, that guy played in the AFC Championship game. Did you hear that? 13 of 17 years. That's his eighth straight AFC Championship game. It's just, I mean, it's just remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Were you cheering for New England or were you cheering for
That's a weird one because you had, I was following that on Twitter all day yesterday. You had Bronco fans were like, what do you do? You know, do you support the AFC West? The reaction I got was most people were at the end, they couldn't root for the Chiefs.
I couldn't root for the Chiefs. My wife
couldn't
was.
For the Chiefs. Couldn't root for the Chiefs.
I cannot root for an AFC West opponent. It just was, I just couldn't do it.
Well, here's the good news. Next on the Morning Bro.
103 decibels and they're just getting started as Zuerlein sets up for a 57-yard try to win the NFC Championship game. The hold is down, the kick clears the line, and Greg Zuerlein sends the Rams to the Super Bowl!
Rams radio right there. So, hey, at least things got easier for Bronco fans. It should be very easy to root for the Rams in the Super Bowl. Think about all the connections.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Kroenke owns the Rams, he owns the Avs and Nuggets. You've got Aqib Talib. You've got Wade Phillips. You've got C.J. Anderson, who, by the way, saw a Denver reporter after the game in the super in the locker room and said, "Hey, tell John Elway, ha ha."
It's kind of funny, right?
Still bitter.
I like that. Do you not like that?
Well, it's all about building. Look, if Tom Brady can artificially plant a chip on his shoulder this past week, I guess C.J. Anderson could probably do it too,
well,
right?
I'm not artificial about it. There's genuine disdain. He's not the only one. Good for him, man. I'm excited for him.
Very good for him, but I still do not say that the Broncos somehow made a mistake on getting rid of C.J. Anderson. Okay? Plenty of teams have decided that it was time to move on from CJ. The Panthers did. The Raiders did. All right. I mean, you know, look, running backs are a dime a dozen, but to his credit, he's found a nice spot here with the Rams. He's making the most of it. He's running hard. He's in the Super Bowl. I'm happy for him.
I am too, man.
I'll get a chance to talk to him a lot
next week.
He's
been great. He's been great.
Next on the Morning Brew.
You know, we played with a lot of energy. Played hard, came out strong, and we played for four quarters, so that was great, and just got to keep it going.
Jamal Murray and the Nuggets keep rolling along as they're beating up on some bad teams coming to town, as they've had the luxury of welcoming Chicago and Cleveland, and boy, you gotta take advantage of these respites along the way. It's a long season, but the Nuggets continue to roll, and are we in a spot right now when it comes to the Nuggets? They're a half game behind Golden State for the top spot, but they are a full four games ahead of Oklahoma and Portland for the 3 and 4 spots. In your mind, is this a top two seed? That it's, this is who they are. And this is where they will be going into the playoffs, either a one or a two seed.
No, I think at the end of the day, they won't be one of the top two seeds.
Where do you see the landmines?
I just think that that's where they're going to end up. They're going to end up at 3 or 4, somewhere in there. And that just is, I mean, it's not about landmines. It's about other teams being on cruise control and, when things start to heat up here down the stretch, I just feel like there will be a couple other teams that overtake them.
Well, it's you do look for the big chunks of road games, and coming up here very soon after these next couple home games, they have a stretch where they play 6 out of 7 on the road, And then later on in March, they have a stretch where they go, what is it, 3, 6, 7 out of 10. Actually, 9 out of 13 mm-hmm. on the road. So, you know, those are the two stretches right there where you wonder if maybe the schedule gets them a little bit. That's the only thing I can see.
Yeah, I don't, but you see, you always, you do that with scheduling and, you know, and I get that. I just think that, again, this is me, mostly this is me talking to NBA guys, analysts and guys that I bump into along the way, and they all feel kind of the same about the Nuggets. Nice story. Really an improved basketball team. But when it starts heating up, when the basketball changes, it's kind of like the difference between what we saw during the regular season and what we've seen during the playoffs, especially with officiating. When things start to tighten up down the stretch as we're pushing toward the playoffs and seeding, is that other teams are going to get the benefit of the doubt and other teams are just going to be better.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Real good start to the game right away. Committed defensively, getting over top of pucks. Our D's gaps coming out of the offensive zone were fantastic. We turned a lot of pucks over, you know, and then our guys capitalized on some of our opportunities. Overall, good commitment to our 200th game.
Jared Bednar's Avalanche had a team meeting and then went out and smoked the LA Kings 7-1. Are you somebody that believes that team meetings are good, overrated, underrated?
Oh, I think team meetings are great. You just can't have it every time something goes wrong. You can't have a team meeting, you know. You can't have a bunch of Big Al always says there's you can have, I don't know what he used to say, like one or two a year tops. Before then, you guys are just getting together, you know, grab hining.
That's all it is.
Bunch of grab hining.
Grab hining. I didn't know that was a term.
Right. It's not.
It's not.
No.
Yeah. Well, the Avalanche are tucked in third place in the Central Division. They play Nashville, their tormentors, a little bit later on today at Pepsi Center. That'll do it for the Morning Brew. Bring that to you each and every morning at 6:30. Your reaction to what went down yesterday. There's plenty of stuff coming in. We'll also kick off our daily visits with Cecil Lammy from Pritch and Cecil as he is hunkered down at the Senior Bowl. And the Senior Bowl ended up being quite pivotal last year for the Broncos. Will it be again this year? We'll talk to Cecil next.
Next week, we'll be live from Radio Row in Atlanta, presented by BlueChew.com. Now, here's Schlereth and Evans.
Well, last year, the Senior Bowl ended up being very impactful on the Denver Broncos. It was very impactful for guys like Baker Mayfield, who went into the Senior Bowl as perhaps a late first-round pick, early second-round pick, and ended up vaulting himself into a position where he ended up going number one overall. Our man Cecil Lammy from Pritch and Cecil is set up there where he's so happy. He's so, I mean, this is where you belong, right, Cecil? You're home.
This is my community, and CJ Anderson in the Super Bowl? Are you kidding me? Like, it's ice cream and double, I got three scoops of the ice cream here in Mobile.
Oh, fudge, too. You had fudge, ice cream, sprinkles, maybe some strawberry sauce, you name it, whatever your, well, you know, whatever your decadence of choice is. So, obviously, there's a lot of positions that we're going to be looking at, a lot of positions, because this roster needs not only depth, but multiple positions to be addressed. Quarterback position being one of those. Is there a guy that you've got your eyes on, whether it's a 10th overall, or is there a guy, maybe the second or third round, that may slip down that you think Elway and crew over there might have their eyes on?
Well, their guy is here. Their top guy is here, Drew Lock. Drew Lock, the quarterback from Mizzou, who I was talking to scouts last week at the Shrine game that say, skill set wise, he's Jay Cutler, which we all can see. We can see that big arm. And then attitude wise, he's kind of a football dork. He's kind of a bit like Eli Manning or a bit like Andrew Luck. I like that because the physical side is easy to see. Scott McLuhan always says that, like, you can see the physical tools, but what about the mental makeup? So this week, I think my number one investigation is finding out what makes Drew Lock tick, being around him, finding out as much information as I can, talking to him, all these sorts of things, because if he's there at 10, chances are quite likely that that's the Broncos pick. And he's right here in Mobile. And by the way, John Gruden's coaching him because the Raiders and the 49ers staffs are here coaching. And the Raiders have Drew Lock, and they also have Daniel Jones, who's a quarterback from Duke, who we all saw that bowl game against Temple, what it was, 5 touchdowns, something like that. So is that the answer for the Denver Broncos in the first round at number 10 overall? I don't think so. I wouldn't take a quarterback at 10 this year. This is a defensive talent draft. This is defensive heavy. There's some offensive linemen as well. So at 10, I would go corner. I would go inside linebacker, defensive tackle. But if the Broncos want to go quarterback, Drew Lock is here. If he checks off all the boxes for them in the interview process, I don't think the skill set process, that's even a debate. And then Daniel Jones, the Duke kid, who's got a little bit of Carson Wentz to his game, that's a guy that's also an option. If they want to wait further, Will Greer is here as well. Now, I like Will Greer for what he is. In fact, just kind of going into this game, Will Greer's my favorite quarterback here, but I know what he is. He's kind of Andy Dalton. He's Andy Dalton at TCU. He's an accurate quarterback. He's smart. He can move around, and he can make plays on the run, but he just doesn't have that arm. If he's got space to operate and really stride into his throws, then Will Greer can make all those throws. If the pocket is tight, things are collapsing around him, and he has to just kind of flick it with his arm, he can't do that. His arm's not that strong. So for what he is a second-round quarterback. So if the Broncos do go defense, or let's say even they go tight end, and yes, there are tight ends who are worthy of that number 10 pick, if they go a different direction in the first round, maybe somebody like Will Greer would be an option for him in the second round.
Would drafting Andy Dalton be that bad? Andy Dalton with Cincinnati, a team that we've always kind of just thought of as, you know, being a very mediocre to below mediocre team. The guy's 67-50 as a starting quarterback in this league.
Yeah, and what I would say
would
that
to
that
so
is you need to get someone that replaces Case Keenum, though. Like, and I don't think Will Greer does that week one, so you're kind of left with the whole, like, he'll take over when he's ready. Like, I don't like that. And here's what I really don't like about taking a quarterback this year. It prevents you from taking a quarterback next year or the year after that, because you'll be like, well, we took Drew Lock in the first round. That's our guy. The quarterbacks aren't that good this year. This isn't the year to be taking QB, yet everyone I talked to, worst kept secret in the scouting world, because everyone I saw last week, scouts, executives, everyone I talked to was like, so Denver likes Drew Lock, huh? I mean, everybody knew it already. I was like, what? That's kind of the buzz, right, that we hear Drew Lock is their guy. Well, he's here now. Does he wet the bed, or does he rise to the occasion? I remember seeing Russell Wilson at this game, Kirk Cousins at this game, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen. Like, we've seen some really good quarterbacks. We should be able to tell right away, is Drew Lock the best guy here, or is he just another guy?
How about the depth of the offensive line at the Senior Bowl? Because that's something that the Broncos desperately need to address. It seems like we're talking about this year in and year out. It's always the same conversation. So how about depth O-line wise at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, I'm looking at O-line and defensive line, because again, I remember Aaron Donald at this game. But on the offensive line, some intriguing prospects, including small school guys. There's some small school tight ends I'm looking at too. But I look at a guy from Alabama State, 6'6", 311, at Titus Howard. He's one of the most fascinating players here because of his size, his wingspan, and his athletic movement. Does he hold up against some of the better defensive tackles like Isaiah Bugs, a kid from Alabama who's here? Does he hold up in the one-on-one drills in the pit? That's where you really see the best action. You can't really tell much about running backs or inside linebackers because there's no tackling to the ground. So you can kind of see how they move, what are their instincts like, but you can really tell on the offensive line and the defensive line because of those one-on-one battles, because of that pit drill, and watching guys out there like Titus Howard, that kid from Alabama State. That's what I'm going to be focused on when the pit is going on. Also a guy like Andre Dillard from Washington State, 6'5", 306, so a little bit lighter. Like, what kind of offensive line is Mike Munchak going to build? I know it's going to be a good one, but what are those key pieces? So a lot of players here, big schools, small schools, that are trying to make an impression on all these scouts.
Cecil Lammy at the Senior Bowl. Cecil, I want to go back to Drew Lock, because the comparison to Jay Cutler kind of interests me. Because Jay Cutler, there is no denying that Jay Cutler is one of the most talented quarterback prospects that's come through this league in a long time. I always felt that if you had like a skills competition among all the NFL quarterbacks,
Cutler could win it because he had it all. Arm, size, mobility. But he was Nuke LaLoosh, you know? $1 million arm, 10 cent head. Bull Durham, go watch it, people. Get a little refresher course. But the thing about Jay Cutler is, you know, he just didn't have the attitude. He didn't have the want to. We saw Paxton Lynch, you know, supposedly checked all these boxes off when it came to athleticism and talent, but we know that he didn't have the right mindset. Talk to me more about what you're hearing about Drew Locke, because if he's a bit of a nerd, but he loves football, but he approaches it in a way that's kind of nerdy, that's okay with me.
Yeah, I like that.
As long as he loves football.
Yeah, that's
the
main thing.
The other two didn't.
Make sure that the guy is dialed in and this is what he wants to do. And again, that's more finding out the mental makeup of Drew Locke. That's my assignment here this week. I think it's the most important thing I'll do, because when I heard that about, like, well, he's kind of like Eli Manning or Andrew Luck.
I'll take that.
I was like, fine with that. Now what he is. And there's three games everyone needs to watch, and they're in a row: Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama. In those games, he had one touchdown, seven turnovers, and he was about 40% passer. I think it was more like 45%, but still, it was terrible. It was a terrible three-game stretch. So why, against those top teams, didn't he perform well? What was the problem? Where's the consistency? Where's the, you know, rise to the occasion against those bigger teams, those better teams? What about that? You know, slaying the dragon, if you will. We didn't see that from Drew Locke. So again, the physical stuff. Yeah, you know, we've fallen in love, and I've been prey to it as well. Fallen in love with that big arm. Well, he's got that, but does he have the right head? Does he have the right mentality? Is he the guy to lead this franchise? The Broncos are kind of hoping that he is. At least that's the early buzz, and we'll see if Drew Locke does enough to cement himself. And by the way, at the Shrine, I heard that Washington is wanting to leapfrog Denver to maybe move up and get a Daniel Jones, get a Drew Locke. So now, if you really like Drew Locke, you might even have to move up to get him for the Broncos.
Look forward to our visits all week long. We'll hear you again coming up at 9 o'clock with Pritch. Thank you, Cecil.
Be good, fellas.
All right, Cecil Lammy, all week long at the Senior Bowl. Next week, watch us next week from Radio Row on the Low T Cam at 1043thefan.com as we'll be live in Atlanta. You're going to clear the air?
Yes. Yeah.
You need an assignment, don't you?
Yeah.
For everybody who is coming out of yesterday's game saying, we got to change instant replay to include pass interference, and we have to change the overtime rules. I want you to address both of those.
All right.
Clear the air. Coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.